And we're back! You know, this movie made me realize something. I really love, like, late 70s, early 80s horror movie music.
Oh, I know. It's like,
That's great.
Well, it's all sounds like it's all played on the exact same very badly tuned piano. And that is like, that is like the precipice of what 70s and 80s horror soundtrack should be.
Yes. That and
it was just all one synthesizer. They all played all on the same keyboard in the same studio.
Not even a keyboard. It's an actual like shittily tuned piano. Like keyboards weren't really as big of a thing as they are now.
Do you think like those real fancy keyboards that come out today, like they have a setting for 80s horror movie?
Well, they probably have a setting for regular piano sound, and then you could probably like really high end ones. You could mod them to be like poorly tuned.
Gotcha.
Or you could like just throw in, oh, I want to run this program, poorly tuned piano, and just start hitting keys, and you're like, oh, I just walked into like
this is beautiful.
Some kind of slasher. Who's popping out of that door? You know.
All right, guys, welcome.
Popping out of places.
Pardon,
David? Popping out of places. Yeah.
Popping out of places. Wah! All right, guys, welcome back to the Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Stopped Living and Became Mixed Up Podcasters. I, of course, am Matt. We got David live via television. And that is him. And Jake, of course, sitting across from me.
Hello, hello.
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 And this week, we are doing a movie that I really thoroughly enjoyed.
As did I.
We're talking, of course, about Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 1.
The original.
The original.
1984.
Not the 20...
worth watching.
What about the 2012 remake? I guess we'll visit that at some point.
It's a pretty loose remake. I haven't seen it, but I just heard about it while I was actually researching this film.
I mean, we kind of have to, you know.
What was that, David?
So Malcolm McDowell's actually in the remake.
No shit. I didn't even... Yeah. Fuck. When was the last time he was in something of note?
I know it existed until I researched this movie. Yeah.
I saw that the Cinema Snob was doing a review of it this week, and that's the first time I'd heard of it. Anyway... I got thrown off. Never mind. Ignore that.
Yeah.
So, yes. David, go ahead and take it away. Tell us about Silent Night, Deadly Night from 1984.
Yeah, so Silent Night, Deadly Night, as you said, 1984. American slasher film directed by Charles E. Sellier Jr. The film was released by TriStar Pictures 1984, which was right smack dab in the golden age of slasher films. The movie came out actually, I believe it was just 4 or 5 months after Friday the 13th Part 4.
Huh.
So obviously it was that was the peak slasher era years. And the thing about this movie is it received substantial controversy.
Yeah. Can you like really like doubt the fact that this one brought controversy?
That's the funny thing about it though is that it wasn't even the first Santa themed slasher film.
Okay.
Me and Matt were wrong then. We both were under the impression it was.
Black Christmas?
Was Silent Night, Bloody Night, or what was it called? There's another one that came out literally 3 years earlier.
Black Christmas.
What was that?
Black Christmas.
No, that one, that came out in the 70s, that was definitely a Christmas-themed slasher, but it wasn't, the killer wasn't, dressed as Santa, though.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to look it up right now. I believe it was just called Silent Night, or something like that.
Well, that's the name of the 2012 version. I did see Silent Night, Bloody Night.
I guess a lot... What was that?
I did see Silent Night, Bloody Night when I was looking for this movie on Prime.
That actually might be the one I'm thinking of. But regardless, I'll come back to that in a second.
Yeah, yeah.
So, In addition to receiving negative reviews, as most slasher films was, it was pulled from theaters a week after its release because of the controversy.
What?
The film was...
Yeah.
What was that?
Jake didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah. Pulled after a week. Charles E. Seller Jr., that already. Those other credits include the television series The Light Times of Grizzly Adams. Should be noted that he hasn't directed a film since 1985's The Annihilators, but he enjoyed a much longer career as a producer and writer, including credits from such well-known films as The Boogans, The Boogans, The Fall of the House of Usher, and even the 2000 reboot of Knight Rider. He unfortunately did pass away in 2011.
Oh, man. So let's talk about the cast here. First, we had Robert Brian Wilson as adult Billy Chapman, the burly young man. Much of Wilson's credits were on television, including single appearances on many 1980s shows, including Dynasty, Matt Houston, Houston Nights, 30-something, and Perfect Strangers. He also played the part of Colonel in the 1990 TV movie, Gunsmoke, The Last Apache. His most consistent work was as Brad Russell in the short-lived soap opera Generations, which ran for 3 seasons from 89 to 90. He last acted in the 2016 film A Husband for Christmas, which undoubtedly was a Lifetime or Hallmark original.
Most likely, yeah. After that, we have Lillian Chavin, who played Mother Superior. She had a 60-year career in acting. That's fucking awesome.
Insane.
But that spans not just television or movie, that's also the stage. Like, that's crazy. And behind camera work, some of her notable big screen credits include supporting roles in Predators 2 with Danny Glover in 1977's The Other Side of Midnight with Susan Sarandon, and as Miss Devereaux in Jean-Claude Van Damme's 1992 blockbuster Universal Soldier. Her television credits are too many to list, but some of them are X-Files, Murder, She Wrote, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Whoop Whoop, Friends, Magnum P.I., Malcolm in the Middle.
I thought that she looked familiar, so... Yeah.
So,
we've seen her more times than we probably all would ever realize.
And then she also directed an episode of Young and the Restless, which, all right. So she's really gone the full gambit in thespianism.
Yeah, she has.
Unfortunately, she did pass in 2008 due to health conditions.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, look at the film I was thinking about. The movie's called Christmas Evil.
Christmas Evil, okay. That'll be another one to watch. We wanted to do more Christmas movies, but... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I said they had long trouble production history, but yeah, it's very similar plot. Definitely check it out. It's not quite as fun as Silent Night, Deadly Night, but, you know, the point is that there was a Santa Christmas movie before this one, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway, other cast members, Gilmore McCormick as Sister Margaret, best known for her performance in the stage and film versions of Godspell in the early 1970s. You have Britt Leach, who is a man, as Mr. Sims. He's best known for his part as Al Wallace in the 1985 classic Weird Science. His other credits include Sergeant Cook in the 1981 horror film Night Warning, and as Mr. Potter in The Last Starfighter, starring Lance Guest. Hmm. And of course, as every movie we review on the show, the horror movie legend Linnea Quigley is also in this fucking movie. I'm pretty sure she's been in every single movie we've reviewed so far.
Well, I mean, she is a real trooper.
She is awesome.
That's insane. I mean,
trash,
Return of the Living Dead. So she was dancing on the... I mean, I think I asked the same question last time. In Return of the Living Dead, she was the one dancing on the fucking gravestones or whatever.
Yeah.
Really like to get naked.
Nude or partially nude in her role.
Yeah, yeah. So Linnea Quigley was in this one. She's been in just about every movie we've reviewed.
Right.
So anyway.
Should we change this to like...
The Linnea Quigley podcast?
Yeah.
Maybe. To be fair, it should be noted that other actors with similar parts... Huh?
What was that, David?
We're sorry, guys. We're having a little internet issue in today's episode.
No
worries. Okay. Where was I at? To be fair, it should be noted that other actors with smaller parts in this film, like Tara Buckman, Charles Dierkop, the first Killer Santa, and Will Hare, the grandpa, amongst others, had very long careers playing primarily bit roles and guest roles, both before and after this film. But if we went through them all, it would take probably a full episode.
Or more.
So let's jump into the story.
We start off in 1971 with 5-year-old Billy Chapman and his family going to see Grandpa in a nursing home in Utah. All right, just to start off, that way to set a tone. Way to set a tone.
You know, if you're starting in a mental hospital.
Like, and you're going to see Grandpa.
In Utah.
In Utah. Where the Utards are, according to my friend who lives there.
Utah.
But, Grandpa's in a cathartic, or a catatonic state, my bad. And while the family goes to talk to the doctor, Billy stays with Grandpa, and Grandpa pops out of it and just starts telling him crazy shit about how, like, Santa only gives presents to little boys and girls who are good all year, and he severely punishes boys and girls who were naughty even just for a little bit. It just... crazy shit.
I think it was a little unsettling for Jake.
It was kind of unsettling, yes. But, That was,
And
that was hilarious because, this guy just immediately went back into his catatonic state as soon as the parents came back in the room. Which leads me to believe that this guy just sits around all day and just waits for little boys to come to the room, for his parents to leave, and then he just, you know, does a little spiel and goes back to him.
Yeah, really pedo vibes. Really, really little boy pedo vibes. No bueno.
Boston Catholic priest. While driving back to wherever the hell they came from, a man dressed in a Santa outfit seemingly has car trouble and gets Billy's family's attention. It should be noted that before this, we do see aforementioned man dressed in Santa suit holding up a liquor store and shooting the cashier pretty coldly, pretty graphically.
For a sum of $31.
For 31 bucks, by the way.
31 bucks, yeah. Yeah. As they pull over to help, the Santa Claus criminal shoots the father with a pistol. He forcibly removes the mother, attempts to rape her, and slashes her throat with a switchblade. Billy runs off to hide, leaving his baby brother Ricky in the car. What a fun, heartwarming scene, guys.
Yeah, right, and it should be noted that Billy did witness his mom's throat getting cut. Like, so...
And then, seemingly, by the way the camera work done, really focused in on his mom's titties.
Very much so.
Yeah,
there was a good amount of horror movie boob in this movie.
There's a lot of boob in this movie.
Matt says it verges on gratuitous. I disagree. I think it was tasteful for the amount of boob for slash ratio.
Yeah, I would say Blood Diner had more gratuitous boob.
Blood Diner had ungodly gratuitous boob. Am I hating on the gratuitous boob? Not whatsoever. I'm just saying it was gratuitous.
David, your thoughts?
Boob.
I say your thoughts on the boobage.
No, I thought it was par for the course for a early '80s slasher film. You know, I mean, back then it was it wasn't like you said, it wasn't like Blood Diner where the whole they were trying to go as over the top as fucking possible in that movie. So it made sense to show as much gratuitous boob as possible. These were being made by major studios, like Paramount and stuff like that. These weren't
these would be considered softcore porn.
Yeah, so they still wanted these movies to get, some mainstream traction. So you weren't going to see, almost like exploitative levels of boob. But this is about as far as they're probably going to push it, though, I'd imagine, with the rape and such.
Yeah. All right, so we fast forward to 3 years later. We're in 1974, and Billy and Ricky are celebrating Christmas in an orphanage ran by Mother Superior. I swear I'm not drunk. I don't know why I slurred that. I've only had one drink. A strict disciplinarian who persistently strikes children who misbehave and considers punishment to be a necessary and good thing. She likes to dim them spankings.
You know, as someone who was spanked with a paddle that had our last name and an attitude adjustment tool carved into it and having that bruised backwards on my ass, ooh, that one kind of hit a nerve.
Still, probably better discipline than we saw in Don't Go in the House.
Yeah. Oh, much better discipline than Don't Go in the House. Much better. Now, granted, like that thing was a 2x2 with a carved handle and everything into it. And
holes to cut resistance?
No. Just the last name attitude adjustment tool.
Right. What?
I have a friend when I was in high school whose dad had a similar paddle, but this paddle actually had holes drilled into it strategically to increase, cut down wind resistance.
Yes. For swing velocity, yeah. The more momentum you have, the harder something's going to hit. That is just physics.
Yeah. Ouch. Let's see. Sister Margaret, the only one who sympathizes with the children, tries to help Billy by letting him play with the other children. But Billy is constantly subjected to Mother Superior's scrutinizing eyes and regularly punished.
Regularly punished.
For going outside.
And, I mean, even this next bit, like on Christmas Day where they have a Santa come to the orphanage, the kid's saying, I don't want to fucking go, but you're dragging his ass up to Santa? Like, lady, like, you are the definition of bad Catholic.
I'll point out, though, that I, as a lifelong, as a person who grew up in the Catholic Church, I went to Catholic school for 9 years.
I went to Lutheran school for a while. I get you, because they're just as bad. They're just a step less.
But see, I never had that experience. I never had nasty, mean nuns at my Catholic school. We had one, but she was kind of always just, like, in her office and didn't talk to anyone.
I feel like this is coming from a completely ignorant standpoint. I've never been a part of the Catholic Church or anything, but it feels like that trope was way over fucking exaggerated of the nuns beating the shit out of people. But you hear more about it from people that are like 10 to 15 years older than us.
So
that went to Catholic school.
So, like, I went to Lutheran school before I was fully homeschooled because of my ADHD. And one of the principals of my Lutheran schools that I went to was my dad's 7th grade teacher. And so it was not uncommon for my dad to get a phone call from him saying, James, your son is just like you. My dad got his ass whooped by this man regularly. And then eventually he got expelled for wearing a t-shirt to school saying that said, my father is my motherfucker. To Lutheran school in the 70s.
That's wonderful. I mean, that's pretty much what I've heard too, that, yeah, there definitely was corporal punishment in the Catholic schools of yesteryear, but I think that pretty much ended by the time, we were in school, I think that pretty much more of the 70s, I think kind of ended like in the late 70s, maybe.
Well, yeah,
I just had Lutheran school teachers telling my parents I was fucking stupid right in front of me.
Well, we've seen that on Zoom this year, but yeah, I think child abuse is just slightly more frowned upon in the modern age.
Well, like, so, okay, so
especially third-party child abuse.
Like, I'm not gonna lie.
Actually, no, any party, any. I'm gonna go ahead and say we're against all child abuse here at this Incredibly Strange Creatures podcast.
I'm personally against child abuse because after school care workers used to duct tape me to a chair because they couldn't handle me.
I think you may have just gone to a really fucked up school, bro.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like what started my path to understanding why religion is evil.
By the way, that was more of a nervous laugh than a funny laugh. Fuck. Yeah, man, that's harsh. I'm glad you ended up in the homeschooling though, because I feel like that. No, that was worse. Oh, because that's where the paddle was. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is dark.
So this movie resonates personally for me, okay?
All right,
like On some levels.
We gotta stop triggering Jake. We gotta...
but triggering me is part of the fun.
Yeah, it is. As long as we don't go full trigger.
Yeah, like, because then you might have, like, a meltdown, and, like, I'm not down for that right now.
Did you read that part already?
I did.
Okay, well, we're gonna fast forward now 10 years later. It's the spring of 84, and now adult and strapping young Billy leaves the orphanage to find a normal life. With the help of the sister Margaret, I believe, he obtains a job as a stock boy at a local toy store. Yes, thanks to sister Margaret. I jumped the gun on the... damn it! Anyway, at the store, he develops a crush on his co-worker, Pamela. He has sexual thoughts regarding her, which are often interrupted by morbid visions of his parents' murders. And Jake and I actually talked about this scene while we were watching it. And I don't know if it was a purposeful artistic thing to make all of the sex scenes in this movie very awkward and kind of fucking like, ugh.
But it also made all of any sexual scenes also ended in some form of violence.
Yes.
Like when, like earlier in the movie when Billy was peeping on those two people.
It ended in violence.
Freaking Mother Superior whooped the shit out of them!
Yeah. Well, I feel that's important too because a lot of serial killers, you know, if you're weird like me and watch a lot of serial killer documentaries and Manano does the same, you know, a lot of serial killers from a very young age, there's an intertwinedness of sexuality and violence that seems to be prevalent in a lot of their developments.
Yeah.
And it kind of leads to the point where they can't break the two apart.
Ed Kemper's a great example of that one.
Yeah. So definitely, you know, this is that was pretty cool point you brought up.
Yeah, I thought that was. So. I was like, at first I'm thinking this is, they just don't know how to film a sex scene. And then the second watch them, I'm like, oh, this is an artistic choice.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Similar to the sleepaway camp situations where, you know, whenever, you know, kind of weird sexual undercurrents or sexual things are kind of brought up, you know, around...
Angela,
You know, violence is soon to follow.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Sorry about that.
Excuse me, Jake forgot to mute his phone.
I thought the driller killer was like, you know, killing Jason in the background.
We set it up to have a live murder on the podcast, actually. Surprise!
My ringtone used to be an angry Hindi man swearing and yelling at you, but then my boss heard it, not while working, but he's like, you need to change that. I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Normally it's on vibrate or it's on my Bluetooth headphones, so it just goes straight into my ear. So normally I don't think about it, but yeah. So I just got a turbo going off because I can. It's a higher pitch than the blowers and the machinery I use, so I can actually hear it over my work equipment.
There we go.
What do you know?
There we go.
All right, David. So, I believe,
Yeah, so on Christmas Eve, the employee who plays the store Santa Claus has been injured the night before, and as a result, Billy's boss, Mr. Sims, makes him take his place. How coincidental. After the store closes, the staff has a Christmas Eve party.
One of the saddest-looking Christmas Eve parties ever. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Christmas party I've ever
But they're, like, just standing in the middle of the store drinking booze and singing Christmas songs, like, awkwardly.
Come on, where's the bitch photocopying her fucking ass on the photocopier? Where's the dudes fucking doing lines of coke? It's the 80s. Come on, act like it.
Seriously. All right, sorry to cut you off.
Sorry.
You're fine. So, the Billy's dressed in a Santa Claus suit, tries to have a good time at the party, but he keeps having memories of his parents' murders, causing him to feel depressed. Oh.
At one point, he sees his co-worker Andy making out with Pamela, and they both walk into the back room. Now, this obviously would upset Billy having
a crush on Pamela.
Having a crush on Pamela, so he follows them in, and he sees Andy actually trying to rape Pamela, and then he goes full like Michael Myers, Friday the 13th. Retard strength and strangles Andy with a string of Christmas lights. Like, damn, bud! It was crazy. Like, and then he just goes stem to sternum on freaking Pamela. Man.
Like, yeah, that was pretty gruesome.
That was, like, unnecessary. You saved her life and then you kill her? Like, bro, like, you just did unnecessary extra work. You could have killed them both at the same time.
Oh. Yeah, you're right. You could have gone to Jason 2 for one deal, but he is his first kill, guys. Okay.
Yeah,
this is true.
You know.
This is true.
He just goes into berserker mode immediately.
But, I mean, I think it was watching Andy try to rape Pamela, and then that whole, like, fully kicking his insanity into high gear, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Triggered to high hell.
Let's see. At this point, a highly intoxicated Mr. Sims, who's just walking around with a three-quarter empty bottle at this point, goes back into the back room to check on the noises he heard. Just when he's about to leave, Billy murders the fuck out of him with a hammer. Sticks that fucking shit right into his skull.
Like balls deep status. Like in there like swimwear, yes. Man.
Billy turns off the store lights, causing his manager, Mrs. Randall, to go and check on him. To go out and check out the back room. She screams at the sight of Mr. Sims' corpse, hammer sticking out of his head and all, and tries to call the police. But Billy cuts the phone line using a double bit axe, causing her to run and hide. Billy's now walking around the store trying to find her, and at one point, Miss Randall jumps out and trips Billy, stealing his axe. Before she can escape, though, Billy shoots and kills her with a bow and arrow. One of my favorite parts of the movie, by the way.
Yeah, it's pretty, isn't it?
Yes.
So, Sister Margaret discovers the carnage and returns to the orphanage to seek help via telephone. Or how it's written. Anyway, Billy breaks into a nearby house where a young couple named Denise and Tommy are having sex, and a little girl named Cindy is sleeping. Now, I want to point out just how weird that all sounded coming out of my mouth right now.
Yeah, you were a level 10 creeper on that one, bro.
Yeah, kind of weird, right? Kind of weird movie, though.
You would need to see Matt's face to fully understand just how level of creeper you were.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I know David, though.
I know David as well. And we both know, like, he's just creepy. I love you, dude. I love you.
Okay, so Billy then impales Denise on a set of deer antlers, which is actually a pretty fucking original kill at this point. And throws Tommy through a window, which is a very weak and uninspired kill.
Yeah. Yeah. That one was sort of weak and uninspired.
Well, it's like, if you do this awesome kill that I've never seen before in any horror movie ever.
Thank you.
Immediately public just throw him through a fucking window?
I said the same thing about the fucking antlers. Like, that might be the most groundbreaking part of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, that might be the one thing that was super unique to this movie, because, I mean, every horror movie's basically the same tropes, but...
Oh, I mean, everybody gets impaled on something, but the fact that you used a mounted deer rack...
I love it.
Like, and I mean, don't get me wrong, this... I'll save that for later.
And by the way, the practical effects on that were fantastic.
Oh, indubitably. So, anyways, when this all wakes Cindy, Billy then comforts her and asks her if she's been nice or naughty. She says she's been nice, and he gives her the utility knife that he used earlier on Pam.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. After this, he witnesses bullies picking on some sledding teenage boys, and he decapitates one with a fucking axe!
As the other screams
in horror.
That's a great scene, too.
Oh yeah, I do appreciate the baseball swings and then the head missing.
Yeah, it was.
It's like you're swinging for the fucking fences.
Yes. Chef,
man, if you go, because you know it's coming. If you know he's down there, and if you know this fucker's coming, but once you get a fucking deal, bam, the head goes fucking rolling. It's fucking great.
Fuck yeah, dude. we're really tapping into our inner Henry Zebrowskis for this episode.
We're all hitting a new level of weird, and I'm digging it.
The next morning, the orphanage is secured with Officer Barnes and Captain Richards, aided by Sister Margaret. Who knows that Billy has committed the murders? The deaf pastor, Father O'Brien, who is dressed as a Santa, is mistakenly shot by Barnes upon coming forward, mistaking him for Billy. Barnes is then axed by Billy while distracted. I think we skipped the part with that creepily, why do we even have this scene where a Santa is sneaking into a bedroom, and then it turns out to be a little girl's bedroom, and her dad is Santa, and implication of possibly daddy rape?
Ah, yes.
So, I mean, I'm just throwing that happened.
Yeah, but I have you not noticed that some kind of sexual deviance
is connected to everything? Yes,
has been the underlying theme of all great horror films.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's based in some reality to an extent. Look at more Freddy Krueger. You know.
Well, I mean, where are you most likely to trigger even the most hardened of people? Sexual crimes, especially
towards children.
Yes,
that gets me going on a whole other level of I want to fucking murder.
Right. Okay.
So this is nice, dark, but yeah, this is a nice, you know, uplifting, heartwarming, you know, Yuletide Christmas special, guys.
Yes, I'm having more fun.
I'm always having fun.
Oh, my nipples are as hot as a couple of icicles right now. Oh, yeah.
You know, just hearing that makes my dick go from 6 to midnight.
I was half-mast before, but now we're full on. Anyway.
So, due to the Santa outfit, Billy gains access into the orphanage and confronts Mother Bitch Superior, who's now in a wheelchair.
Good.
She taunts Billy due to her disbelief in Santa Claus, and just as he prepares to kill her with an axe, Richard appears and shoots him in the back, much to Sister Margaret's shock. As dying Billy lays on the ground, he utters to the nearby children, "You are safe now. Santa Claus is gone." Before succumbing to his wounds. As the children gather around, Ricky, coldly staring at Mother Superior, utters, "Naughty," setting up about 5 awful sequels.
By the way, I'm just wondering, how did Ricky stop aging while Billy continued to age? Because Billy at this point, in age they were what? It seemed like maybe 4 years apart or something like that, 5 years apart.
Yeah. So Ricky should have been 14.
Yeah, but that kid looked like he was about 10. But, I mean, I'm splitting hairs here. It just seemed like he could have got a little bit of an older actor. But yes, you set up 5 subsequent awful movies. We probably will cover at some point, but...
Well, the second one is more or less just a recap of the first one with some new footage added in.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally, flashbacks that none of the characters were even part of. And so it's how would Ricky be remembering what happened between these 2 cops in a cop car driving down the road? He wasn't in the cop car. But that's the memory that he has. Anyway, release notes. This film was released theatrically by TriStar Pictures on November 9th, 1984, opening in 398 theaters in the Northeast and Midwest United States. On its opening, the film finished 8th, grossing $1.4 million. It outgrows Wes Craven's landmark slasher, A Nightmare on Elm Street, which opened the same day, albeit to 235 less theaters. Fewer theaters. Before being pulled from theaters, it grossed over $2.4 million on its first 10 days. That's pretty good.
That's not bad. In November of 2013, it was announced that Fangoria, in association with Brainstorm Media and Screen Vision, would be re-releasing the film to theaters in the United States throughout December of 2013.
So now the big Bambino here, the controversy and censorship surrounding this movie is probably more, it's probably what made this movie what the legend it was. I kind of feel like, this is a great slasher flick, but with so many movies that came out at the same time that were kind of, there's so many, it was a time when slashers were really kind of flooding the market, and I kind of feel like in this case, had the controversy not become so ridiculous, that this movie probably wouldn't have gone down as, you know, the kind of cult classic that it is. It was one of the most controversial films of the 1980s, due primarily to its advertising campaign that made significant inferences of Hitler being dressed as Santa Claus. The PTA fought to have this film removed from theaters due to its subject matter and the fact that it was shown around Christmas. Although an earlier film with a similar premise, Christmas Evil, had gone unnoticed. Television advertisements, which aired between episodes of, ironically, family-friendly series such as Three's Company and Little House on the Prairie, led to parents complaining that their children were terrified of Santa Claus. Can you imagine that? Why?
Why would you take your kid to see this movie?
I've seen worse parents do shittier things.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, but it's a man that all parents aren't fucking ass clowns for a second, okay? Imagine like a good family, you know, that's conservative, you know, nice conservative religious family in the 80s, you know. Imagine they
said during the Reagan people.
Oh, yeah, the Reagan years, you know.
You know, it's the 80s. Come on, it's the fucking 80s.
I mean, we did comment earlier on there was a significant lack of cocaine for it being the 80s.
Yes. There's a lot of cocaine in the 80s.
Especially since they could have made a White Christmas reference somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And Quaaludes.
And
the Ludes.
And, like...
Yeah.
The fucking Ludes, man.
Anyway, I mean, a few years later... Never mind. I was going to make a bad joke about crack. Continue on.
Well, the crack came a little bit later, but it was a come, you know. Anyway, kids watching Little House on the Prairie, suddenly fucking Santa Claus horror movie. Fun stuff. And the parents complaining that their children were terrified of Santa Claus. Large crowds, mostly angry families, formed at theaters and malls around the nation to protest the film. At the film's East Coast premiere in the Interboro Quad Theater in the Bronx in New York City, protesters picketed the theater and sang Christmas carols in protest, and by doing so made the film a shit ton of money.
Okay, let's see. Made a film, and in response, TriStar Pictures, the film's original distributor, pulled all ads for the film 6 days after its release in November 15, 1984. The film itself was also withdrawn shortly thereafter. Due to the controversy in response to the public outcry, producer Ira Bismarck told People magazine, "People have taken offense at Santa being used in a scary context. Santa Claus is not a religious figure. He's a mythic character. I didn't deliberately ride roughshod over that sensitivity, and I didn't anticipate the objection to it."
An editorial published in Variety stated, "Most protests were generated by the feeling that the depiction of a killer Santa would traumatize children and undermine their traditional trust in Santa Claus." When the film was castigated at length by Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, the backlash against the film became louder and more widespread.
Okay. The film was due to be re-released by an independent distributor, Aquarius Films, in May of 85, with an ad campaign replacing the original "Twas the Night Before Christmas" theme trailer with a new one centered on the controversial surrounding of the film and edited out all the close-up shots of Billy in the Santa suit with weapons. The print ad material also replaced the original chimney picture with one that talked about controversy. However, the film only had further test engagements.
In the United Kingdom, the movie was never submitted for certification to the BBFC, and its sequel was denied a video certificate in 1987 after the distributors refused to make the cuts required for an 18 certificate. However, in 2009, Arrow Films submitted the film to BBFC for classification, who passed the film uncut with an 18 certificate. The UK DVD was released on November 23rd, 2009. I'm going to point out something funny here. I don't know if you guys remember the show Tiny Teen Adventures from the early 90s.
Yes.
Yeah, there was an episode where they actually did a a spoof, basically, where Montana Max dressed up as Santa Claus for like a short film contest they were doing, and they show him like basically killing Bugs and Babs with the Buster and Babs with a sledgehammer, what's implied. So So, Steven Spielberg is awesome. That's my basic point.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that you include that in a kid's show, you know, not even, what, maybe 10 years, not even after the movie was, you know, grounds to go for angry mothers everywhere, that's awesome.
Right.
On the website Rotten Tomatoes, Silent Night, Deadly Night holds a 43% approval rating based on 23 critical reviews with an average rating of 4.6 out of 10. Siskel and Ebert condemned the film, and Siskel went as far as to read names of film's production crew on air, telling them, "Shame on you." Gene Siskel also said that all the money the filmmakers were making off this film was blood money.
Leonard Maltin also denounced the film, surprise, surprise, calling it a worthless splatter film, giving it 0 stars and asking, what's next, the Easter Bunny as a child killer? Hey, that's a good idea, Leonard. That's a great idea, Leonard.
That's an amazing idea.
A Daily Variety review argued that whatever arguments the film was making on the commercialism of Christmas were overshadowed by the graphic violence, which the reviewer saw as off-putting.
If you remind, this was like, this was when Siskel and Ebert spearheaded the whole anti-slasher movie movement, so
right.
This movie came like just the right fucking time to take advantage of it. It was great. And it made a lot of money off of it. Michael Wilmington wrote in the Los Angeles Times, it's safe to predict that Silent Night, Deadly Night will start making worst movie of all time lists almost immediately. One positive notice came from Kirk Ellis, actually, from The Hollywood Reporter, who complimented director Sellier's workmanlike competence and praised the cinematography and Gilmer McCormick's performance as Sister Margaret, which both actually were pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes, indeed. So, time to give our final thoughts and our ratings. And I know that all of our scales are a little bit different. David, you know, judges these a little bit harsher than I do. For me, this is a solid 4. It's not... You know, I don't love it as much as a Sleepaway Camp or Terrifier, but for me, it hits a lot of the right spots, and I mean, goddamn, why can't we have more cheery montages in the middle of slasher films? Because that shit was weird.
Yeah, it was kind of like, are we doing like a family drama or a slasher?
So Jake, what do you give it?
As you stated, all of our scales are slightly skewed. I'm not gonna lie. It wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible. It actually was good, and it was well. The artisticness of it was well done. Certain things are impacting it a bit heavier than they probably should. Like, the Christmas party really is having a heavy negative impact on it. But I'm actually going to give it, like, a 3.5 out of 5.
There you go. That's not bad.
You know, it's a C, and it passes.
David?
Yeah, I'm actually going to... It's actually one of those films that when I was a kid, I heard about, you know, my very sheltered Catholic school world and was just mortified at the thought of a killer Santa Claus, and he saw it years later and I thought it was just, you know, fucking awesome. It was every bit as gruesome, sadistic, dark, disgusting, trashy, sleazy as I could hope for. So I'm gonna go ahead and give it a 4 out of 5.
That's one of David's higher rated so far, I believe.
I just think that for it, it takes balls to make a movie like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It takes nuts. Especially in that time. And yeah, no, it wasn't the first, you know, Santa-themed slasher film, but it definitely... I've seen both films, and this film definitely cranks up the sleaze factor.
I love that.
Compared to the other.
And as I stated earlier, I will say, I do appreciate, and part of what gave it a 3.5 was the classy and tastefulness of the boob to gore ratio.
It was a good boob to gore ratio. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me right now, but don't worry, you worry. So It says here what we'll be reviewing next, but we never actually discussed that. Let's see, we skipped Jake's pick, so maybe we should go back to Jake's movie.
Yeah.
Because Jake had some family issues the week that we were supposed to do yours. What was that again, Jake?
A dark song. Yeah, but honestly, after watching it, though, like, it was so disappointing, I don't want to review it.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it because there's just...
Too much of a slow burn for you?
I'm not crazy about the fucking sex magic stuff.
Right.
So, I don't know. We'll figure out something. We don't need to tell you right now, but on the air.
I'm totally down for my other pick that I've been throwing out that we've been saying yes.
The Danny McBride Halloween. I'm down to do that.
I've been wanting David, to do it.
I'm down for whatever, as long as I find and review it. What's it called?
It's Halloween
movies?
Yeah, it's Danny McBride's Halloween.
Oh, yeah, I have that here. I've watched this. We can preview that.
Okay, so that's going to be our next episode. Look for it to be next Monday. I think we're going to keep doing the recordings live on Twitch. Hopefully this time the computer doesn't just completely crash for about a minute. That would be great. But anyway, David, Jake, I'm Matt. Boys, say goodbye.
Bye!
I want to touch Matt's wiener. And, hopefully you won't be raped by Santa Claus in your sleep tonight.
Dude, I know.
Right?
Alright.
But Santa'd have to deal with my K-bar first.
Yeah. Alright. Jason, say goodbye.
Protect your butthole!